Off the ball
on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
All right, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by two-time Paralympian champion, Mark Rowan. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Nathan. Thanks for having me.
It's coming up in 6 years since the London Paralympics. Yes. You still like the sound of two-time Olympic champion?
No, I still cringe when I hear it because it feels like a lifetime away now. For six years. Yeah. And it was only a while ago since we were looking at Rio. But I see some of the guys, the Irish Paralympic cyclists, are out in Rio this week competing today, actually.
Okay.
In the world.
So they are actually still using some of the facilities?
Yeah, they sent pictures back of some of the roof was burned, but the velodrome has survived. I know some of the pools have been in shabby condition, but the velodrome. So they're competing as we speak, actually. So best of luck to those guys.
So we haven't heard from you for a while. What are you up to?
I went back when I retired. I went back to study an MBA in sports management with Real Madrid and the University.
As you do.
Yes, as you do. Yeah. Well, I thought I better enter the real world and get a bit of education.
Yeah.
And then I did some internships through that in Wembley Stadium. Went out to San Jose State to work with their soccer team. There's an Irish guy called Shane Crew out there from Kilkenny that's the coach, and actually he just got a job with Monterey Bay as the head soccer coach.
Oh,
not a bad job. And then I came back to Portugal to set up a cycling hiking retreat, and I started working with Quinta do Lago down there lately in their latest sporting centre. So they're building a state-of-the-art pitch, tennis courts, high performance unit down there for teams to come and train, but also for the locals to use as well.
We'll get the promotional aspect out of the way first. You're here talking about the Real Madrid Foundation clinics. What's the Real Madrid Foundation?
The Real Madrid Foundation is the arm of the Real Madrid football team that promotes sport, promotes education, promotes integration, promotes marginalised members of society, I suppose, through sport, using sport as a tool. They're in over 70 countries throughout the world, over 750 clinics. So there hasn't been one in Ireland ever before.
Okay.
So what it is, we'll be bringing academy coaches from the Real Madrid Academy over to Ireland. We have two camps in Dublin in the National Sports Centre, the National Sports Campus in DCU. We'll have two camps, one in June, one in July. And we'll also have them in UL, AIT and NUIG. So it's a chance to bring...
Are these straight up football camps?
Soccer camps, 80% soccer and 20% on the educational socio-development of a player, you know, and it's all built on the Real Madrid philosophy. So you look now and you see the likes
What's the Real Madrid philosophy?
That I suppose, be the best that you can be, you know, and give the people who have a chance, I suppose, to be able to learn from the best people in the world, give them a chance to be able to learn from the coaches who have helped coach Lucas and Carvajal and some of the best players coming through Real Madrid at the moment.
So is this for everybody? Or are they looking around the DDSL and Kennedy Cup squads and they want the best of the best, and it's half a scouting mission?
No, it's absolutely everybody. So the coaches are Real Madrid coaches, so we're not selling it as a scouting mission, but it's for absolutely everybody from 7 to 17 and for boys and girls. So it's not... We won't be doing any fitness tests or skill tests for people to enter. So, the whole reason behind it was because when I was studying there, I had spent nearly 2 weeks with Alan Kearns Foundation over in Zambia before, and I saw the work that those guys had done in Zambia with the Alan Stars, and how sport played such an important role on the development of kids in a disadvantaged area there, and the opportunity it gave them. So when I was in Madrid, I learned about the foundation. So I approached them to say, listen, I have a connection in Zambia. And they said, well, you know, we like to work with partners. So as a result, I set up a company here in Ireland. And they used the funds from these camps to fund the social camps throughout the world. And as a result of being, you know, getting the license to host the Real Madrid camps here, we also get to do social projects in Ireland. So we'll be setting up 4 social projects around Dublin, Galway, Limerick. Galway, Dublin, Limerick and Athlone.
Okay.
In the coming years. Well, you know, the obvious one is to work with youth. I spoke with Gordon Brett down in Athlone, who had mentioned that Willow Park, a soccer team there, would be working with refugees from Syria. We also looked at something I want to do is work with the elderly, the senior citizens, see can we use sports promote theirs. But we're still open to ideas and to people who think it might be a good fit for them. Definitely to get in touch and let us know.
Yeah, what's the best way of getting in touch?
Would be to Google, I suppose, Real Madrid Camps Ireland, or else the website is FRM, so Foundation Real Madrid Clinics Ireland.
Mm. And that's the same if anyone wants to get involved, take part in the camps over the summer?
Exactly, they get all the details there. Yeah, there's a Facebook page and Instagram page.
All right, very good. A chance to work with Real Madrid coaches doesn't come along every week, so yeah,
and for the kids, but we're also looking to recruit some coaches as well, give them the opportunity to work along with them. It's a very early stages, you know.
Yeah.
But the whole process behind it is to use sport as a tool to give people the opportunity to become the best they can be.
You've done a lot since you retired. How long is it since you finally decided that you weren't going to go to Rio?
2015, due to a classification.
Yeah, remind us of that, because I don't think people, maybe at London 2012, because there was so much interest in the Paralympics, people started to get on top a little bit of classifications, but it was only when I heard of your retirement and just how complicated it can get and how one inch here and one inch there can make such a difference to people's careers. Can you talk us through why ultimately you came to the decision to retire?
When you say inches, like that's, so my level is T1, T2, it's where my break is. Within hand cycling, there's five different classes.
Okay.
So this is, it's already getting confusing, but on up until 2014, if you were from C4 to C7, or if you had a similar injury, so if your heart rate was affected, your lung capacity, your ability to recruit muscles to pump blood around your body. So they were saying physically you were the same level, you compete against each other. So that meant I was in the H1 category at the time. Then they opened up two other categories. They introduced another category where people with severe disabilities would also cycle, say, with hand impairments. And then they revised the process in 2014. And because of the complications, they just drew a line. They said, OK, if your break is between C3 or C4 and C7, you're out, you're in this group. So they didn't take the other factors into consideration, like, you know, heart rate, sweat responses. And it just became black and white. So as a result, my classification changed to say, okay, because your break is here, you're now in this category. So the reality was that, so people who stayed in that category, my own category, who were beating me by 10, 15 minutes at the end, you know. So in 2012 was the last gold medal I won.
Mm.
2013, I was second, third in the road races, fourth, fifth time trials. But I was gradually getting pushed out of the top. So for them to turn around and say to me, well, you're physically in the wrong classification. I'm thinking, you know, I was in the classification. I was thinking, you know, you're basically ending my career here. I said, have you actually looked at the results over the last 3 years? Oh, we have, yeah. And I said, well, how much did I lose by in the last World Championships? Oh, we don't know. I said, well, 20 minutes. In a road race, it's a lifetime. So somebody who had a C7 injury, which is the neck, they might have hand impairment, but they might have full trunk.
Okay.
And that's a big difference because you have more muscles to push the blood around the body to stabilize going up hills and stuff, recruit more power. So I don't blame them because it's hard to have a category where it suits everybody. So for a couple of years it suited me, and then you're just put into another category that, like, they did stuff with cerebral palsy athletes where they start recruiting or classifying leg amps.
Mm.
And then they suffered because the leg amputee guys weren't as severely, some of them weren't as severely disabled. So within the world of Paralympic sport, if they decide to change classifications as they go along, you could be lucky and you might not be lucky. And it's down to numbers, because they, I suppose, they have to keep the most people the happiest.
Yeah.
So it was, and I was aware of it, so it wasn't a massive shock to me, because I know the Paralympic sport is...
So you knew it wasn't an overnight decision, you knew this
was
coming?
Oh, no, it was being revised for 2 years, so there's always a chance. You know, my classification was, you know, when it's a grey area, it's down to medical interpretation, you know, because it's impossible to prove these things, really.
Mm.
You know, they don't use heart rate, or they don't use a full cardio investigation into how your heart works, and because it's impaired, you know, depending on the level of disability, it's impaired.
were you fully prepared for it even still, even though you knew it was coming mentally? That I guess so much of your identity had been built up with the success in London around being a Paralympian, around being a champion Paralympian, and suddenly that's gone.
I don't think so, because when you know, in terms of your identity, because you know, when you do sustain a spinal injury, your life changes like without any control whatsoever, just in a split second. So it's something you've dealt, you deal with change pretty, and you adapt. You know, you become adaptable pretty quickly. And because I had worked, you know, this wasn't like a dream from 7 years of age to become Paralympic athlete. So you know, when I set my sights on it, then that's what I wanted to do.
How long was it from your accident to deciding you wanted to be a Paralympian?
Well, after my accident, I was involved with, you know, part of rehab in the hospital. They do brilliant work there with table tennis, archery, and I did well with archery. And then I started playing basketball. The IWA were running basketball at the team in Dublin at the time, and then the IWA had a sub-development officer in Tullamore, Orla Dempsey, who we got a club going in Athlone with the help of the Marist College. So when I got back into team sports, but actually I remember managing Banlahown FC, which is my local soccer team at the time, 2002-2003, and just sitting on the sideline, and the boys would be having a cigarette at half time, or they'd be drinking the night before, whatever. And I just thought, I want to maximise, even though I'm in the chair, I want to maximise my full athletic potential over the next 10, 15, 20 years. And that's when I started playing the basketball, and I progressed from that lone team to play with the Irish team and got to go to international competitions. So that's when I really got a flavour for to become the best athlete I could, you know, as a Paralympic athlete.
And were you fully satisfied then upon retirement that you would achieve that, or is there still something burning inside you that wants to compete at a high level in something?
No, that's gone. No, I suppose now there's a new challenge. You know, the Real Madrid Foundation is the new challenge, and I want to make sure that I offer a good product and people will get something from it. But no, when I all of the stuff that I got as a hand cyclist was a bonus. Everything that happens now in my life really is a bonus. So there's no burning desire, there's no grudges, there's nothing left that I want to fulfill. Like, I still ride my bike, stay fit. So in terms of that, and you can even see it, you know, as you get older. I don't know if you see it, but you lose I suppose it's testosterone levels, really. But you know,
that calm down a little bit.
That urge, you've chilled out a bit, And like, and now I when I'm living in Portugal, I play wheelchair handball. It's a local team there, and we're supported by Sporting Lisbon, Sporting Messines. So we're actually playing the finals in April, national finals, and like, it's a total different. It's very chilled out. The lads stop for a cigarette in the bus on the way up to Lisbon. I really enjoy it because I'm trying to learn the language, but I'm also happy.
Have you a drinks ban?
There is probably just before the game, but
that's it.
There's no Davy Fitz mentality there. sport can be enjoyable at that level at the right time, but then now it's just more of a social thing.
So you've been doing a bit of travelling and you've been around. When you've been looking at the facilities for disabled athletes in Portugal and around the continent, and being in England at times, where is Ireland right now?
I know it's topical, and actually I was listening to the discussions about
sports grants.
The sports grants, yes. And like, for example, I live in a small place in Portugal, Messines, 3,000 people. And it's one thing I discovered when I was playing wheelchair basketball with Ireland in 2005. We went to Benfica, and every small place has, even in Portugal, swimming pools. They'll have a soccer pitch, they'll have a gymnastics area, but it'll all be within the town or the municipality, and they'll all use it. Whereas here, like, I'm from Athlone, you have Buccaneers, you have Athlone Town, you have Athlone GA, and you have the Athlone Regional Sports Centre. Four different organisations, all within a mile of each other. And you know, that was a really good interesting conversation with John Green about pausing everything and just saying, okay, let's do a stock take, an inventory of what we have in Ireland, and seeing what do we need. Because if you've got five different clubs with five different pitches in a small area, that's not the best use of resources, I think.
No, that's, and we probably even haven't really got to that side of the conversation fully yet about having municipal sports centres around the country that we're still talking about. Well, the GAA club didn't get this, or the rugby club didn't get this, or the soccer club did get this, and the GAA club are excluded, rather than, well, actually, if we're going to be giving government funding, we should place some sort of demand that actually it is open to everybody, that people do get access. And it's funny when you're mentioning the names of the clubs, Real Madrid, Benfica, Sporting Lisbon, these are, could easily just be a soccer club. They, if they wanted, they could easily, yeah, they could make enough money from just being a soccer club. Yet there's something, and maybe it's the tradition, maybe this has just always been the way. They're not just a soccer club, they're a sports club.
Yeah, and I even with the Sporting Lisbon thing, they support the team, but they brought us up to one of the games at half time, and they brought all the supported clubs onto the pitch at half time, like in the stadium in Lisbon. And even the, like, when you talk about they could only be a soccer club, like, I know from studying in Real Madrid, the soccer team funds the basketball team, and then the soccer team will fund all the social projects throughout it. But yeah, getting back to it, I think, well, even visiting venues around Ireland to host this camp, I was blown away by the facilities that universities have in Ireland. It's incredible. UL, amazing facilities. AIT, amazing facilities. DCU, amazing facilities. NUIG, amazing facilities. The sports campus, the best in the world, really. Mm. But when I visit all these, most of the pitches were empty when I visited most of the... So are they getting the best use? And then each university will put in a commercial manager. They have to maximise revenue on each... So whereas if it's with a club, they can look at the bigger social impact of having a venue somewhere. And yeah, I think the Portugals and the Spanish, they've got a better hold on it at the moment, I think.
Mm. And it also means on quite a basic level you can tap into that club a lot more in terms of the support. They take pride in what you're doing with a basketball team, same as they do with the soccer team. Whereas, like, an example, and you don't want to put the pressure on just any one club within this country, but Munster Rugby or a brand like that, if it suddenly becomes a greater thing than just a rugby senior men's team, that you've not just got the women's rugby team, you can look into other sports, they can be this big representative body that has this support base that people are already tuned into. Like, it seems something actually quite obvious for the country that would actually tick an awful lot of boxes.
Yeah, I suppose you do get a certain amount of it with the GAA, you know, with Gaelic, hurling, handball, maybe the music, I don't know, it's the music side of it part, I'm not sure.
Born and old.
Yeah. So I suppose we have a certain amount of it, but yeah, it would be good to see it replicated. It would be, you know, to see a town say, we need this many pitches, we need this, and everybody use them and tap into them.
Mm.
But I think it's a long term project, and there has to be a bigger step back to say this is for the greater good of Ireland instead of this is for a small club. We need to get this many people. And
so you were doing a master's degree in sports management. Was that just based on your experience, something you felt you would be good at? You'd looked around, saw there was a gap in the market, something you could contribute to?
I just didn't basically want to work for a year, so.
Fair enough.
I know, I love to travel and love to get an outside perspective of the sports industry.
Yeah.
I remember when I studied in DCU, did a degree in sports management and went to Australia to work with the Australian Paralympic Committee for 3 months. And I just see the benefit of learning as much, I suppose, I can from other countries, bigger countries that have, you know, more people, more businesses, more opportunities. And at the time, the Real Madrid NBA was ranked top 10 in the world. So, and it's like, I always loved watching Spanish soccer from back with the Galacticos time. So I thought, how cool is this? It was brilliant, you know, to be able to,
did it live up to the hype?
Yeah, we got to go to the stadium, look at, you know, the basics of operations of, I remember visiting the week of the Barcelona Real Madrid match, and it was the security, you know, we got to see behind the scenes, security, everything that goes into it. And like, the biggest security threat at the moment for a stadium is drones.
Okay, someone flying something in,
dropping something in, yeah. And they're using hawks to take them out. at the moment they have snipers on the roofs, but they use hawks. Like, I would even be interested in, you know, the how everything runs.
So they're giving you a pretty broad base that it mightn't be managing a sports team performance on the pitch. It could be becoming a stadium manager.
Exactly,
it could be a security manager. Just a
now we visited also Bilbao basketball team, Basque region.
Okay.
And how forward they are with their esports. They have an esports team. They bring people from all over the world, live in houses, and they compete. So you see the next stage of the sporting world, I think it will be esports. We went to visit NFL teams, NBA teams, universities in America. Just getting a really good global grounding of sport, and the opportunities are out there.
And you're going to bring in all these learnings back home at some stage?
I hope, yeah. That's my plan, is to come back and manage Westmeath to an All-Ireland at some stage.
Why not? When you come back home with all this that you've seen and been to all these great sporting organisations and learnt a little bit here and there, do you come back home and look around at some of the things we're doing in Ireland and raise your eyes to heavens, or are we doing all right?
Oh, amazing. I think we're too hard on ourselves sometimes. When you see, and on most of the places I've gone to, there's always a GAA club, you know, and I think they're brilliant. So I'm obviously a big fan of the GAA, and then soccer in Ireland. And even the basketball. I listened to Kieran Donnelly lately talking about the basketball, and I remember watching the, as a recommendation actually from your show, the Setanta Sport documentary on basketball and the
hanging from the rafters.
I was just blown away by how strong basketball was at the time, and people in Ireland have massive opportunities to take part in sports. Of course, the weather is the biggest, it's the only obstacle, but I think Ireland sport-wise, you see at the weekend with the rugby, there's a massive appetite for sport here.
Yeah, you obviously then really enjoy the elite side of it as well, and you're getting to visit these clubs. But right now in your current gig as well in Portugal, getting to meet a lot of good people and learn from them, and in what's happening in Quinta do Lago, I think it's a pretty popular destination for a lot of good clubs and a lot of good sports people.
Yeah, so like the Quinta do Lago, they're now building a sports campus. It's called The Campus. And we built a state-of-the-art soccer pitch, high-performance gym, outdoor swimming pool, tennis court. We just held an ITF Futures tennis tournament. The cycling side of things, which I'm looking after, we're running cycling tours. We had the Brownlee brothers training down there. And yeah, you're getting to meet, we met Dillian White, who's fighting this weekend, who's an amazing story, actually. You know, came from Jamaica on the streets, lost two brothers. They died in the streets, came to the UK, became a kickboxing champion at 17 years of age, now fighting. He fought Joshua. He reckons he'll take him again. And then we had the Burnley guys down, so we had five Irish soccer players there. So you're seeing, you know, the levels of planning and preparation. We just see the finished articles, but I think the Irish rugby team were there in preparation for Tokyo 19, so a year out. So you're seeing... You know, on a Monday morning, people like to critique performance and everything. But when you see the amount of work that goes behind the scenes, it's a real eye opener. Yeah, so the high performance side, but also the recreational side now is.
Yeah, I've seen following Paul Kimmage on Twitter. He's been over with you doing a bit. Is that what your main involvement right now?
Yeah,
at the moment
so I'm looking after the cycling side of things, promoting cycling, organising events, and
is that for elite sports people who are seeking out a career in cycling, or is it just people who like a little bit of good weather and get out on the bike and enjoy a holiday?
Have you seen Paul Kimmage lately? I'm calling him elite. No, we're just exploring Portugal, staying in nice hotels, eating nice food, drinking a bit of wine, and just enjoying life out there. Yeah,
that sounds alright. So when are you going to take the Westmeath job?
They're playing awfully Sunday, so we'll see how that goes first. But yeah, I always keep an eye. I love keeping an eye on the club scene and the county scene, because it's fascinating. Now the next couple of years are going to be fascinating in terms of the Super 8s and how things go there.
We will be keeping a very close eye on it here and off the ball anyways. So remind us again before you go, the Real Madrid Foundation clinics taking place around Ireland this summer. What's the website?
Is FRM Clinics Ireland. and you get all the information there in terms of times, prices, everything you'll find there.
Mark, great stuff. Thanks a lot for coming in. Enjoy the nice hotels, the nice weather, the nice wine. We're very jealous of the life you're leading over in Portugal.
So that's enough about Westmeath.
Come on. All right, we'll take a quick break.
Off the Ball on News Talk. In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.